Hi, thanks for listening to the It's Not Just One Thing podcast series from Physio My Dog. I'm Harriet Kitkat and I'm from Physio My Dog. I'm a vet physiotherapist specialising in dogs, but I'm also a dog owner myself, and I'm also incredibly nosy and interested in knowing more and more about what we can do as dog owners, but also as therapists as to what we can do to help dogs. So I hope you find this series useful. Hello everyone. Well, welcome to another exciting episode of our podcast. I'm actually co-hosting this one with my friend, good friend Becky, and fellow physio. We're currently sitting in a field full of cows and we're keeping an eye on them to make sure they don't suddenly surprise us. But anyway, as I'm meeting Becky today, we thought we would do a joint session on physiotherapy, because we haven't actually done a session, well, for my podcast, we haven't done a session on that yet.
We haven't on my podcast either.
Oh, well, there you go.
Because we're both joint podcasters.
Yeah. So, Becky, do you want to introduce yourself?
So, yeah, well, I'm going to put this on my podcast too, so people will know me. So we'll have to do a both introduction.
You introduce me,
and then you introduce
me. Yeah,
you.
I'm Rebecca
Bayers from Little Grin Stables, and I also co-host the Ecological podcast with Kate Blackmore from Ecological Positive Equine Partners. And we have a weekly podcast that goes out mainly about horses and horse training, but we cover lots and lots of subjects too. And I'm a physio, a veterinary physio, so work with horses and dogs and occasionally cats. I have worked on the odd rabbit and a tortoise.
And you've got birds.
And I've got birds.
Yeah.
Yeah, my parrots.
So lots of animals.
Oh, I have lots of my own animals, yes.
I'm Harriet Kitkat from Physio My Dog, hence the name Physio My Dog. I do physiotherapy on dogs. I'm based in Frome, Somerset, which isn't too far from Bath. And Becky, you're based about an hour away from me, so where's that?
Yeah, nearer Taunton, in between Taunton and Chard, but I cover Somerset, Devon. Occasionally I dip into Dorset, but not very often. But yeah, Somerset, Devon, the sunshine states.
So what we thought we would do today is talk a little bit, talk a little bit more about physiotherapy, as we both haven't actually done any specific podcast on physiotherapy as a particular topic. So, as I say, I specialise in dogs. Becky does more than just dogs. So what I thought I would do is ask her to talk us through about how she runs her physiotherapy sessions for horses, and then we can talk a little bit more about how we work with dogs. Not on dogs, we work with dogs, as we work with all of our animals. Just to see, so it's the same kind of type of therapy, but actually sometimes when you're working on different animals, sometimes our approach and that type of thing might be slightly different. So Becky, I'm going to paint you a picture that you've just turned up to a brand new customer. You don't know, you know, you've only got obviously the information that you've had previously from the vet maybe and from the owner. So you've got all the right paperwork, you've got all the right information that you need to know from the owner. Talk us through how you would then start that physiotherapy session.
Okay, so it's always individual. Every physiotherapy session, like every animal, is individual. So the plan is going to be different for every horse, every dog, every cat, every rabbit, and every tortoise, if you get to see the tortoises, that you see. So that's really important. And I think both you and I are quite good at tailoring those needs to suit that animal. I know you're very good at that, and it's something that I try and strive to do as well. So making sure that we are seeing what the issues are, seeing what we can do to help, prioritizing, and what's good, what we can do to help make that animal feel and move a bit better. It is never just one thing, as again we both know. It's a whole environmental process. So being a physio isn't just about the physical needs of that animal. It really is a whole environmental look at that animal and what they're doing. Now, with horses, it's slightly different to dogs, unless you're using performance or sports dogs, which I do work with a lot of sports and performance dogs, and I know you don't so much.
No.
But it is different because we ride horses generally. Generally, physios work with horses that are in ridden work, and they can be in a very different amount of ridden work. So they could be the ones that go for the odd walk around the block with somebody sat on them. They could be the ones that are out every weekend jumping big jumps and running through fields and et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of different modalities that the horse does that is very different to the dog. So basically what the horse's job is, and that in itself, I'm putting that because makes me cringe a little bit to say the horse's job, but that is really what I'm talking about with the owners, because I have six horses and I just love them. They are like my pets, but I am in the minority. A lot of people have horses that do jobs, and I work with a lot of clients who have horses, and those horses are there to do a job, and they need to do that job to be able to warrant their life being there, which is not so much the case in the dog world, thankfully, and it is changing in the horse world slowly. So yeah, I would turn up to my new client and I would firstly be very observant on where the horse is kept, how the horse is kept. I want to know about the diet, I want to know about the type of exercise, the type of job that horse does. If they have a job, I want to know about the dental, whether their teeth have been regularly done. So horses, unlike dogs, I mean, dogs do need dental work, but horses should have 6-monthly dental checks. That's quite important, so they need to be up to date with that.
Why is it, so for people who wouldn't know, and that's kind of a curious question for me as well, why do you feel like it has to be so much, why is it more important for horses?
Because of the wearing down, so they need to wear their teeth down, basically. You have, as babies, so it's important for all ages of horses, but babies and the geriatric horses, it's really, really important. So the baby's teeth are growing, so they lose their milk teeth around 5, and the little teeth come through. And then as they get older, dental disease, like with dogs, is really, you know, is a bad, it's a thing, and it happens. And they can get impactation. They have diseases. Patch, one of my ponies, he has a disease in his mouth where the teeth dissolve. He has to have he has teeth checks, dental checks every 6 months, and he's had to have several removed. You can get chipped teeth. They have wolf teeth. Some horses will have wolf teeth, which might need removing. I'm going to cough, sorry. So dental work is really important. So, and also because they're ridden, if you think about that, if they're bitted, so they have a bit in their mouth and they've got dental pain, then their teeth get sharp. So rabbits need, quite often they need dental work doing, because their teeth are constantly growing and they get sharp, so they need filing down. It's a similar thing with the horses. So those teeth get sharp, and then you put a bit of equipment in their mouth. And they can cut their mouths from the inside. It's not good. So dental work is really important. So I'd make sure all of that is up to date. I would really, really want to check the environment. I want to see where the horse is living, whether they're living in a field or in a stable, whether they've got company, whether they are, what their ridden world is like, whether they've got any behavioural issues, because that's also really important. Behaviour and pain are quite often linked. So I hear things like, he always puts his ears back when I bring the saddle out. Well, to me, that's a sign that he's not so keen on the saddle coming out. So why is that? That horse bucks when we take the right canter lead. Well, does it on the left? No, doesn't do it on the left, only does it on the right. Well, that's not okay. We need to look at that. So I'll talk about all of that. So also diet, we need to look at diet. Gastric ulcers is a huge issue with horses, especially high performance horses, but can be, all horses are susceptible. So high performance horses that are quite often over threshold, that have quite high energy, are expected to do a lot of high performance work. It can be quite stressful for them, especially if they're not housed in a more natural environment. They might be in a stable most of the time. That's quite a small space. If we think about I know we should, you know, hamsters are not the funny pet, aren't they? Hamsters. But if you think about the size of the hamster, and I'm not saying that this is great, but you think about the size of the hamster and you think about the average hamster cage, still not great, is it? But then you compare that hamster to the size of a horse and put it in the size of that stable.
It's
pretty,
it's quite different, isn't
it? It's pretty shocking. So there's all sorts of things we want to look at. So we want to look at nutrition, we want to look at health, we want to look at dental, we want to look at performance, we want to look at the equipment that you use on the horse. So like we do with the dogs, with harnesses and leads, It's the same with the horse. So we want to make sure that the tack fits. Does the saddle fit? When was the saddle checked? Because horses, guess what? They change shape, you know?
Do you get many like skin issues of horses? Like some, you know, some dogs quite often get quite sore, rashy, that type of
you
thing.
You can do. I mean, you would do a certain amount of static observations.
Yeah, so that I was just wondering, and also from ill-fitting like saddles or...
Rubs. Yeah, you get rug rubs. Yeah. Rug rubs are very common. Mm. And quite often owners don't do anything about it, which I find really strange. And they'll rub on like the points of the shoulder.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do get that. Because again, it's, you know, a size, a 15-hand horse... And you'll get a rug that, well, that 15-hand horse might be completely different shape to the other 15-hand horse. You know, you get leggy horses, you get bony horses, you get bulky horses, you know. So just like any individual, really.
Yeah.
So we might be a size 10 in Marks and Spencer's, but a size 8 somewhere else. You know, it's the same thing. And again, horses' weight will fluctuate. So they tend to get fatter in the summer and be a little bit leaner in the winter. So that saddle that you bought in the summer might not fit quite as well in the winter. So you need to get that checked and flocked. And I'm not a saddle fitter, and that's not my job. But I know when a saddle is too tight, and I know when a saddle's too long, and I also know when a rider's too fat to ride their horse. Which
no,
also happens.
No polite way of saying that, but it's true, isn't it?
It is true. And weight is an issue. You know, if you're wearing a backpack that's too heavy for your back, you're going to feel
hurts.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if you're expected to do a lot of work in it.
Yeah.
So I look at all of that. So there's a certain amount of static observation. So I haven't even touched this horse yet.
Yeah.
And I'm just soaking up the environment. I'm asking lots of questions. I'm a want to know it all, you know, type of person. And that's building clues to that picture. It's like a little jigsaw puzzle. Because for want of a, you know, we're all human and we... Well, apart from the animals that are listening, but
and they will be,
of course. But you know, we sometimes miss stuff.
Yeah.
So when someone's asking us questions, we might answer those questions, and then we completely miss a really obvious point. So so delving a little bit deeper. So you have a list of questions that you'll ask on the phone. You know, talk about that horse for me. Blah blah blah, and then when you get there, you know, you'll have a whole other host of questions because you've seen where the horse is now kept, and you've seen, you know, how it moves on before you've even touched it. You see how it stands, its posture. You know, is it standing? Well, again, you know, compare it to a human. Is it slouching?
Yeah.
Is it stood with a good posture? Are all 4 feet square? Is it resting on one leg? All this stuff. This is all before you've even touched. So that, you know, that's kind of... And then I think it's really important that you ask the questions as well, and you listen, and you really, really listen to the horse, how it moves. So I want to see the horse move. Sometimes that doesn't happen.
Yeah, so how do you do, like, a gait analysis? So for people who don't know what a gait analysis is, it's basically when you're literally watching how that dog or how that horse is moving. How do you tend to do it with horses?
So normally the horse, so for example, I arrive and the horse is in the stable at a yard.
Yeah.
They get, so I don't know how, this is another thing, you see, I don't know how long, I'll ask how long that horse has been in the stable.
Yeah.
Because if it's an older horse and it's been in that stable for 12 hours, it's probably going to be a bit stiff when it walks out.
Yeah.
So I need to kind of be aware of that.
Yeah.
So anyway, so let's say the horse is in the stable, the owner brings the horse out, and it's just a routine. You know, there's no issues going on. It's just a routine physio check because the horse is in... ridden work 3 or 4 times a week, for example. So I will ask to see the horse walk up and down probably several times. We do a lot of recording, you do a lot of recording, you see a lot in, you can slow-mo videos.
So would that be the owner holding the horse and walking up and down?
Head collar, lead rope, and walking the horse up and down, and then I would look from the back, the front and the side, both sides. Then I'd like to see the horse trot.
Yeah.
Exactly the same, back, front, side to side. And then I'd like to see the horse turn. So I want to see the horse turn. With dogs, I normally do sit to stand and down to stand, or down to sit. So with horses, I want to see them turn clockwise. I want to see them turn anti-clockwise. And I'm looking for several things. I'm looking to see how comfortable that circle is. And I want quite a small circle. But I also want to see whether the hind is stepping under. So as they turn in that circle, whether they can step under with their hinds. And quite often, they'll have a preferred side.
So do you want them to step under, or you don't want
them? I do want them to step under. If they can't, there's a reason.
Yeah.
I want them to step under. And generally, So if it's a, if this, this horse we're talking about, which is just routine, it can step under fine. And yeah, so I want to see that. But I want to see, but also that will give me clues to see whether the right side steps under easier than the left. Mm. Is it stickier? So I might, they might have to do it a couple of times because again, you don't know how stiff they are. Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. They might,
because they might do it one time and then you do it another time and they're fine.
Yeah, exactly. So you must never, like, best out of three or something. Yeah. And then I'll make a note of, okay, so they step under easier on the right than the left. So what's the preferred rein? So when you're riding them, which way round the arena do they like to go? Because again, they will have a preferred, preferred way. And there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of people get, oh, they must be even. Yeah. Well, I don't,
well,
because
we're all, yeah, say we've got right, we're right foot or right-handed or left-handed. Or
and it's exactly the same with a horse. It's just good to know.
Yes.
And it's also, does that marry up with the muscle tissue and the tone and what you're seeing with everything else? So it's just information, really. So there's all of that. And I do look at skin. I look at skin to see whether the skin, they've got a glossy coat or a dull coat, the eyes, the ears, everything. Mm. Do they look itchy? Because horses suffer from sweet itch and itchy stuff and eczema and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And at the moment, I've got a horse with me who's got equine asthma. And her coat is completely different to everybody else's.
Oh.
And I really think it's reflected. Yeah. That health is reflected in your skin.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same
biggest
thing.
It's our biggest organ, and I'm assuming it must be for the horses
as well. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, there's a huge amount that goes on before you touch that animal.
Mm.
And then normally, this is a big difference between horses and dogs. Normally, I say, but not always. The horse will be tied up with its hay net, and then I can start palpating. And so this is very different because obviously horses in general are trained to stand still while humans groom them and tack them up. And they'll have a hay. I like them to have a hay net so that they can eat if they want to. Sometimes if I'm working with the neck, you know, I need them not to eat.
Yeah.
So it depends. But generally I want them to not be stood there thinking, oh, you know,
they're occupied in some
exactly
way.
Yeah, and I think that's it. But they are in some ways easier to work on than dogs because you can get some wriggly little monkeys with dogs and it's hard. They're not used to it, as where a horse generally is, they're groomed every time they're before they're ridden. They're used to it, so and dogs aren't, so that's very different. And then from then on, the basics of our treatment is near enough the same. The moves, the stretches are slightly different. I'll do different things because I've learned different modalities along the way. Just like you, we're not purely physios. We do so many other stuff as well. So there are different aspects to our jobs. But, you know, we do a lot of static observations, a lot of palpation and et cetera. Mm. That is the same as you would with the dog.
Would you work for longer on a horse? I'm assuming
not
you
necessarily.
Would.
Really? No.
Okay. Yeah, it just depends on the horse and what it needs. And
absolutely,
like that.
And I think sometimes you see, not necessarily because the horses are still generally.
Yeah.
So they are, and they don't need the brakes.
Yes.
I find with dogs, when I work with dogs, quite often we'll do a bit and then we have a break.
Yeah.
Because we're having to use quite a lot of food motivation. I'm a big fan of peanut butter, the safe peanut butter, to just keep them still while I'm palpating and working on an area. And it's quite intense.
Mm.
It's a lot more intense for a dog than it is for a horse, because the horse is generally used to, conditioned, habituated to standing still. You know?
So it's quite interesting, though. So when you're... So kind of putting it into context with regards to sort of turning up to a dog, you know, to treat a dog. So the way that you're observing that whole environment, like the yard, like you say, how long have they been in the stable for, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, where, is their food fed from a height? Is it low? That's the same as a
so
dog.
It's really,
there's
it
so
is,
many similarities.
There are lots of, I mean, I'm, like you say, there are differences, but there are similarities to say, because I'll always chat to the owner before I ever meet a dog and find out a bit more about them over the phone. And obviously I've got the, you know, information that comes from the vets, vet notes and the clinical history and what have you. And maybe there's a diagnosis, maybe you haven't always got it necessarily, but you've got an idea about what's going on. And it's interesting you're saying about, because we're both big into the whole behaviour thing, especially with what some of the work that you're doing with the horses. And, you know, I do work with quite a few different reactive dogs now. And so I'll always make sure, that, okay, is your dog reactive to people or is it just other animals, that type of thing? And so as you'll be asking them about where they, you know, where they've been kept and what have you for a period of time, if I know that a dog is potentially going to find it hard for me to be able to go into their house, because that can be quite, dogs can get quite territorial. So a lot of the time I actually ask the owner to meet me outside, especially the very first time, before I've met them in a park, you know, just so they, I'm just like some person at the end of the day, and then we sort of take it forward. So it's
and that can link to horses. You do get horses that are territorial with their stables. It's not that common, but you can, I have seen it. I have seen stable guarding, you know, it does happen. It's less common. But it does definitely happen.
And when you're working on a horse, like quite often if I'm treating a dog and I know that there's other dogs in the house, I tend to request that the other dogs are kept separate, just because a lot of the time they just want to get involved and, you know, they want to be part of the action.
They want the peanut butter, that's what
they
want.
If I know that they can, if they're otherwise occupied as well, it's kind of okay, but I just find it's easier to have them separate at certain times. Do you find that with horses? If you're
treating
a horse,
they
don't come over.
I did have it, our lovely Patreon Victoria, who'll be listening to this. So I went and treated her two horses in a field with the rest of the herd, and it was fun.
Did they come up to you?
Oh, they were everywhere.
It's quite funny you're saying that, because we're actually getting very close to the cows.
Yeah, they're ignoring us. We'll be fine.
Yeah, they're just good cows.
No, they did. They all got involved, and it slowed me down.
Yeah.
But we carried on. I want to work where the animal's most comfortable.
Yeah.
I think that's primary, because I'm there to work on physical needs.
Yeah.
Although there are, you know, we do look into mental well-being as well, because it's part of physical, you know, if you're
absolutely
mentally unstable, you're physically unstable, you know, vice versa. So, and of course we're interested in behaviour as for our own animals and anyway. So I want the animal to be as comfortable as it can be with human touch.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, some of us, it might be a bit sore.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we might be called out because that animal is sore, and therefore we might actually find a sore spot and have to work through that. And that's not great, but we have to do it. So the cows are stampeding.
They are.
Now,
I think
but they're going past. It must be feeding time.
It must be feeding time.
It's so lovely to watch. It's so lovely.
This is like recording an episode of The Archers or something, isn't it? Got the girls right.
But so basically, for any dog, for any horse, for any cat, for any tortoise, for any rabbit, you want it to be, for any animal, you want it to be in the best, the most comfortable place.
Yeah.
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 So if that means that it has to be in the field with its field mates, then that's what I'll do.
Yeah.
It's not ideal. And Victoria, bless her. Yeah, it was, we did it and it was great. And the horses were great and they felt really comfortable. And, you know, there may be history of separation anxiety there. So therefore, that's the way it was. But it doesn't make it that easy.
Yeah.
And it's not generally the norm. But you would do it. And the same with a dog. So if I do treat a dog who does have separation anxiety with its other dog. So they are both there.
Yeah.
And they both get peanut butter. And they both get fishy treats. And, you know, we both have time out. And that's what you do.
Yeah.
But ideally, generally, what happens is the horse is in its stable. We do the walk up, the trot up, the circles, goes back in the stable. I treat.
So you tend to do it in the stable?
Can be, or in the yard.
Yeah.
It depends on the setup. Or can be in the field. It depends on the setup. What you tend to find, unless the horse lives alone, which is unusual, most horses, well, naturally, obviously, they would live with other horses. Some horses live on their own. I find that quite sad. But most horses live in, you know, groups or a small herd or with another horse, or at least can see other horses. So as long as there's another horse around for them to see, to help them, then that's generally fine. But normally on a yard, on a busy yard, which is, I go to a lot of big yards, they're in their stables and they're all next to each other with, you know, munching away on their hay, and then I go and do my thing.
Yeah. So do you have a preference as to whether you treat horses or dogs?
Oh, no, not really.
It's a bit like, I suppose you like them for different reasons.
It's very different. I love my doggy days. I tend to do dogs one day, horses one day, dogs one day, horses one day. I don't tend to do a horse and a dog. That's weird, and I don't know why. I don't tend to mix the species.
Yeah.
So, and I have, I think it depends where I go. I think dogs can be more fun because there's less pressure on them to perform.
Yeah, yeah.
So doggy people can be, this is going to sound really bad because I'm going to put it on my, horsey people can be tricky because they want that horse to, you know, I had a client recently who the horse, the saddle doesn't fit. She knows the saddle. She said to me, I don't think the saddle fits. So I said, well, let's have a look. No,
it doesn't.
Doesn't fit. It's too tight. It's too long. It's too tight. She's tiny, so the weight of her is no issue, but it's pinching.
Yeah.
So she's booked in the saddle fitter to come. The saddle fitter can't come for a 2-week time lapse. So she's riding in a different saddle at the moment. And I've said, okay, I don't want you to jump in that saddle. It's an okay fit, but it's not great. It's not been fitted professionally, but it's better than the one you were riding in. But I don't want you to jump in it, and I want you to ride in a light seat, so you're completely off that horse's back.
Mm.
And I get a message, oh, she's feeling really great. When can I jump, and when can I stop in the light seat? And it's like, yeah, she's feeling really great, but you know what? The saddle doesn't fit.
Yeah.
You haven't had it.
That hasn't made the saddle fit.
No. Yeah. And it's like, can you just wait 2 weeks?
Yeah.
You don't tend to get that with dog owners,
yeah.
I don't think as much, because it's not, they tend to be, it's less about them and more about the animal. As with the horses, it's quite a lot of it's about the human.
Yeah, and there's a much more of a connection, isn't there, between the human and the horse. I mean, physically, as well as obviously, really, I guess, you know, it's sort of a spiritual kind of connection as well.
Spiritual power, ego, control.
Exactly. I mean,
and this sounds awful because I've got some amazing horsey clients who all they want is for their horse to be happy and they'll do anything in their power. And they don't ride, you know, and I still go out.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, that's really important too. You don't have to be a ridden horse to have physio.
Mm.
You don't have to be you're not a ridden dog.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. That's what I was kind of working towards, is the fact that it's so different, isn't it? So, yes, your approach and all the rest of it, maybe there's lots of sort of similarities. But ultimately, what, even if it's a working dog, it doesn't have someone attached to them when they're doing it.
No, it's a different pressure. And I have some amazing horsey clients. I have some very traditional horsey clients, and I do have to keep my mouth shut on my beliefs, but that's, you know, I'm there for the horse at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I do have some sporting clients, sporting dog clients, who I think sometimes push their dogs for their own enjoyment rather than the dog, and or they'll say things like, oh yeah the dog really loves it, the dog really loves it, but the next day the dog can't walk properly, and you're like, okay, so who did we do that for? And that's hard, but I think that's something that it's not for us to say, but it's for us to kind of whisper. So we'll give little clues, you know, and then I think when the owner realizes, when they, if they do, because some don't, some clearly do not want to know, and they'll put their head in the sand and forget it, that it's maybe them that is pushing their animal too hard. But once the human realizes that they've pushed that animal a bit too hard, they're heartbroken about it, and they'll do everything in their power to rectify it or to change. And I was one of those people, you know. I've never been aversive. I've never worked my dogs to the brink of them collapsing, all my horses, but I have gone, you'll be all right, come on, let's go, you know. I've tried to hide things because I didn't want to see it.
I think that's,
and we have to own up to that, and that's us all learning. And I think that majority of my clients want to do it for there for the animal, but unfortunately with horses there is a little bit of ego and control and a lot of pressure from the equine community to perform. You know, what did you do at the weekend? Oh, I went in the woods with my horse and we had a lovely walk and a forage. What, you didn't jump a meter? You didn't, you know, it's like,
whereas if you said I did that with my dog, people go, oh, that sounds lovely.
Exactly So there's pressure, isn't there? There's pressure, but you know, I've had it with dog people that they, you know, that they want to walk their dog, for they want to go out at the weekend for a hike, they want to go to the Brecon Beacons,
yeah,
because that's what they used to do when their spaniel was 3.
Yeah.
And now their spaniel's 10 and it's just had, I don't know, spinal surgery, and they want to walk it at the Brecon Beacons, and now it's being lazy. It's
exactly.
You know,
yeah,
it is,
and I think that's a lot of the time. Actually, we're nearly at the half an hour mark. So
goes on a lot longer than an hour. So me and Kate are normally an hour.
Well, I can always split these into
we
two parts.
We can always do part two.
But I think that's, I mean, and I talk as a dog owner when I say this. I remember with our previous boy, Jensen, he had so many sort of physical restrictions, really, just because of the way, say, his various issues. And that was a big adjustment for us, that we had to, you know, if we wanted to go for a long walk, it meant we had to leave him at home.
Or grieve.
Yeah.
You grieve that and you time, don't you?
Yeah, you do, because, you're kind of, a lot of the time people get a dog because they want to do all these things. You know, they love exercise, or they love, maybe they want to do a certain sport or something like that, and they just want their dog to be part of that. But unfortunately, or they might, you know, get a dog because they want to become, they want it to be a show dog or something, and then there's faults and all the rest of it, and that dream doesn't then happen. So then you've got a dog maybe for not the original reason that you wanted them for, but then that is grieving, isn't it? Because
it is.
Almost grieving for the dog you didn't get.
Yeah.
Or you
yeah.
haven't got now.
Absolutely. And I think, I know that I'm a bit of a monkey, because I'll be like, what's the point of going on a walk without a dog?
Yeah.
I don't want to walk without a dog or without a horse.
Yeah.
You know, and I will walk my horses. My horses go for walks. So it's like, I don't want to walk without, if I haven't got an animal to walk, then there's no point walking, which is completely wrong.
It is.
Because
yeah.
I love walking, but I do love walking my dogs.
Yeah.
But I have clients that are the same, and it's like, oh, actually, I know this sounds really awful, but you can't, your needs are now different to that dog's needs, and we're going to have to look at the priority here, and the priority might be that your horse can't do what you want it to do anymore, and your dog can't do, and so we adjust and we change. I think the other thing, and I know we are over time, maybe we have to do a part two, is that you don't have so much with dogs with horses, is that selling on.
Thanks for listening to the It's Not Just One Thing That Will Help Your Dog podcast. I really hope you've enjoyed it and found it useful. If you'd like any more information about anything that we've been discussing, please contact me. You can find my website by Googling Physio My Dog. You can also look me up on Facebook and Instagram under the same name, Physio My Dog. I look forward to hearing from you.